This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Monday morning, some 2.8 million people have fled the Russian war in Ukraine. And Marina Teplova's daughter and granddaughter are among them. Teplova is currently a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal. She's originally from the east central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. A few days into the war, her daughter, Maria, whom she calls Masha, and her three-year-old granddaughter, Aphrodite, made the arduous trip from their home in Ukraine to Poland, leaving most of their belongings behind. They're presently safe and staying with a relative in the Netherlands, or NL, as Teplova calls it in our conversation. I spoke with her on Friday. Marina Teplova, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
And thank you so much, Brian. Thank you for having me here.
So your family is from central Ukraine, I understand. Can you tell us about your hometown? What was it like growing up there?
Yeah, my hometown is Dnipro. It's the beautiful city located on the Dnieper River in central eastern, I would say, part close to eastern Latvia. Our region is bordering Donetsk, by the way. And this is a beautiful big town with a lot of universities, a lot of industries. And before 1989, we were closed for foreigners because of that big rocket plant. We have it. It's true. Soviet Union, you know, our city is famous for that. We had rockets with like nuclear heads, as far as I understand. They were produced by Soviets, you know, and they were directed, unfortunately, to New York. You know, like we have an open air museum. And when Americans came to our town in normal times, we usually took them to that museum and showed them, you know, like, this is our Soviet legacy, unfortunately. But that plant, of course, was closed. And when it was closed after the collapse of Soviet Union, we had an influx of Americans and foreigners in our city. It's open, beautiful city. We have embankment. We have theaters. It's one of the third largest city in Ukraine, Kyiv, Kharkiv, and Dnipro. And Russians want our city. They want us because they know that Dnipro has a lot of resources, you know, like industries. We have factories, but our city is very resistant. People are very, you know, like, so the spirit, from what I know about all the networks people I talk to, everybody is ready to fight. Nobody is going to give them easy, no.
So what are you hearing from your family members and others? Are they trying to flee? Are they sheltering in place?
Yeah, they're sheltering because, you know, it's people. I know a lot of people in Dnipro. Of course, I know my former students who are in their 30s, young people. A lot of those people are participating in volunteer movement, because they have huge coordination, like headquarters in Dnipro. People are organizing, you know, getting supplies. Some women I know, like, they're even sewing these vests, Kevlar vests, for our soldiers, because there's not enough, there's lack of. But my family, I have elderly mama, like my mom is 72. She has twin sister and my grandma who is 93. She is going to be 94 on April 10. And that's why you see like Ukrainian families are so like chained together. It's like, I try to ask my mom, can you leave? Because my sister is with two kids in Dnipro. My sister says, I cannot leave our mom. And my mom says, I cannot leave my twin sister. And my aunt says, I cannot leave our grandma. And there is no way to put her on the train. You see, this is like physical, it's so difficult. That's why there are so many questions which are unanswerable. I can ask them, but even that is painful, right? You ask them, how do you ask your mother? You tell her like, will you please come here? We will help you. But how will she feel after that? Yes, leaving her elderly mother behind. That's difficult. It's impossible.
Difficult to leave at any age, I'm sure, but especially.
But if you have people who are, you know, and I also, my heart is aching for all of them because they're all there in Dnipro. We call, that's why my day starts with that. Like I call everyone, try to hear their voices. My dad is there with his family. Yeah.
And I understand your daughter is a refugee though, it left.
Yeah, because she left because her dad, he's a journalist in Dnipro. He runs a very big page on Facebook about Dnipro and events in Dnipro region. And that was like due to him because last Monday, I guess, when fourth or fifth day of the war, he just came to my daughter and she was distraught, not knowing what to do. You know, like your life just, you know, is destroyed in a moment, right? You don't even know what to do, yeah? You have the sirens, you sit in the corridors, you sleep in the corridor because going to the bomb shelter, by the way, is not an option. You think that, not everyone can do that. My sister, she is still in the apartment too. And they, when they hear sirens, they try to go to the bathroom. or to sit in the small space between two apartments, which has two walls. So that's their shelter. That's why he just grabbed my daughter, took them to the station and said, Masha, you should go, leave now with the baby, because nobody knows what is going to happen. We hope for the best, but, you know, three-year-old baby should be somewhere far away.
So your daughter and your granddaughter get on a train. What was that journey like?
Oh, that journey was tormenting. It was harrowing. Because to describe that, my daughter told me, there was one day when she called me after they already in safety, and she described me all the details, how scary it was, how women and children, extremely crowded carriage. Instead of 36 regular normal times here, there were 200 people, 200 women and children in that carriage with several compartments, but all corridor, like there was like long, narrow corridor along this like carriage. Everywhere there were people standing, even sitting. Inside their compartment, there were 9 people, 4 women and 5 adults, 5 children. And Masha told me, like, you can imagine, like we were sitting like this, and all of them were trying to put on clothes because nobody knows about the weather. Yes, you have to cross the border. You have to, you know, you cannot even take a big bag with you. So she said they even had to collaborate with women to let each other take off the clothes when it became too hot and impossible to breathe, because it was like hell, you know. It was very difficult, but even in those situations, they helped each other. Masha said one woman gave Aphrodite, my granddaughter, like a piece of like, meatball. She had some food with them. So they started sharing, you know, and you can imagine that. Yes, like that alone is a story of how women are sitting in this coupe, we call it coupe in Russian, or compartment, and in darkness, almost like, you know, little ear. Yeah.
Say more about that, in darkness, because...
Yeah, because that's the order. You cannot...
So it's not a target for weapons.
Yeah. That was like, while they were going to leave, it was like all that 20-something hours instead of 16 regular time. All those 20 hours, my heart was like, you know, I couldn't do anything. I was just with them, because train, of course, can become a target. And Russians are doing exactly that. They want targets with civilians, with women. This is what they're doing. They're choosing them on purpose. That's why trains try to be fast, dark. If they're dark, then they're not seen.
Wow.
But yeah, for people inside, of course, it's difficult. It's not easy. But at least that, you know, my daughter said, you know, we were blessed. She felt as if there were angels like helping them at every leg of the journey. That was amazing. Even in the most difficult moments, she said that something, small thing happened, like two women who were sitting nearby with an infant. They went to talk to the conductor, to ask to put that infant somewhere to give a bit more air. And Masha said they left and we were able to even lie down a little bit. So that was like a miracle, you know, to be able to lie in that train, because where everyone is sitting like herring in a can. Yeah. So that was going to Lviv first. That's just the beginning, you know. Yeah.
Okay, we need to take a break. When we return, we'll hear more from my conversation with Marina Teplova. She's a doctoral student in English at Illinois State University, but recently her thoughts have been consumed by family, friends, and former students in and fleeing Ukraine. Among the refugees are her daughter, Masha, and granddaughter, Aphrodite. We'll hear more about their journey and Teplova's hopes for Ukraine after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On Friday, I spoke with Marina Teplova. She's originally from the Ukrainian city of Dnipro, but is currently in Bloomington Normal, earning a doctorate in English from Illinois State University. Her daughter, Masha, and 3-year-old granddaughter, Aphrodite, are among 2.8 million refugees from the war. Before the break, Teplova was recounting their harrowing train ride across Ukraine in a car packed several times beyond capacity, at night, and with no lights, so they'd be less likely to draw an attack. People may not have a good understanding of the size of Ukraine. Getting from the east to the west, it's like going from Ohio to Nebraska, right, in the United States. It's a big, big country. Yeah.
It's huge. Of course, it might take a whole day to travel. And by car, I can give you many examples. Because I'm connected to many students of mine who are now in Poland and Germany. There are brave women who just had cars, some of them, And one of my students said, Marina Valerievna, this is how they call me in Dnipro when I was a teacher. She said, it took me 7 days.
Wow.
She grabbed her 1.5-year-old son, her mom, her grandma, and that girl was like Nastya. She is a young scholar, teacher at university with PhD in Ukraine. And she said, like, I had to leave everything, new apartment. She got on the car and she said they were moving by car. Because some people, you know, they have cars, but that was also scary because she said, we moved to Vinnytsia, one city in central Ukraine, and some bridge was exploded. So she had to take a different route and she had to turn to Moldova. And that's like, if you look at the map, Moldova, Romania, Slovakia, Hungary, she went through all those countries to Germany. So that was 7 days. And finally, she's there in Germany in safety. So that's like a real story, you know, one of thousands of such stories, of course.
Yeah. Was it a difficult decision for your daughter to have to leave?
It was, yeah, very difficult. When I asked her, I understood that she took it like how like one moment, you know, at first she was sitting traumatized, not knowing what to do because it's shock. You know, you live your life and suddenly one day, you know, everything just is destroyed. You don't understand. What are you doing next? So she had a kindergarten for the baby. She had a job. And suddenly before the war, one day before the war, her employer told her that, so they dismissed her because of the war, because they couldn't continue operations. They were a company producing some case for musical instruments, as far as I remember. And they was based on, you know, like supplying European customers and American customers. Of course, the war disrupted all that. So she even had a laptop from that company and she couldn't even send it back to them because the post office stopped functioning. So she just told me like that last several hours, she organized everything. She organized our cat, arranged the cat to be given to our other relatives in Dnipro. Then fish, she has a big aquarium. She like, you know, she quickly took a lot of decisions. She even had some food in the fridge. She again gave it back to one of our relatives with three kids in Dnipro. And that's it. They just got onto a taxi and her dad took her to a station. That's it. Like she quickly took something, of course, documents here. Documents are a must here. But everything, well, they came to Poland and Netherlands like was something they had on them, like no clothes, you know, nothing. So
we spoke earlier in our show with a reporter who's in Lviv and said when he was crossing in from Poland just last week, there was a line of people 2 miles long. Buses, just with the word children on the side. Was that a long aspect of the journey?
It was. It was. After Lviv, thank God they had some short stay in Lviv. They were able like to take some sleep in one of my former students' apartment. He was wonderful. He's volunteering. He's a jazz musician. And he's in Lviv helping organize that volunteer movement. And he's super busy. But when he heard like me, I just quickly wrote to him, Yakiev, can you help us? He said, yes, Masha can stay at my apartment like for one, at least, you know, one night. And that was important, that was crucial. And after that, they took some bus, and that bus was strange. I don't know why that some company, they promised to take them to the border. But she said that we were like some women, children again, crowded. Suddenly he stops and says, after this, you go on your own. It's like, it's dark, it's night. And I mean, where are you going to go, right? She said they were like crying. They didn't know what to do. Then thank God another bus comes and stops. And Masha says, I had a hysterics at that moment. And they let her in right away because she was like in the state, you know, with a small baby, not knowing where to go. At night, I mean, how do you know where is the border, right? How long to go to that border? So that's how like several buses, as far as I understood, they dropped them off, picked them up, dropped them off, picked them up. And that was like before they finally reached this Ukrainian border. And then they were standing at night. It was kind of cold, of course, they were fatigued. But they did it, and then they walked by foot. As far as I understand, you walk by foot between the border space here. And I remember like how she sent us the message that we are at the Polish border and they're checking our passports. And we were like, you know, it's like, it was a moment of relief. The whole family, you know, me, my student in Poland who was like meeting them, then our relative from NL, we were all in chat, like sort of leading them, you know, helping, understanding where they are, what they are doing, because it's very important to maintain the connection, right? But then after that, it was easy. She said, yeah, they were fatigued, they were tired, but my other student who lives in Warsaw, Victoria, wonderful, like wonderful person, her husband came to bring them home. at night. He also has a baby, like he also has his family, right? He just went there, met and found my daughter by description. He's never seen her. She just told his wife, like, okay, you will recognize me. I'm wearing this and this and with the baby. And my granddaughter is red-haired girl. He found them and they got into his car and he brought them to some wonderful woman whose name is Magenta, because their family is like young family. They have small, very small apartment. And this neighbor has a whole bedroom. And Vika wrote to me, she said, Marina Valerievna, don't worry. They are at Magenta's place. They have a whole bedroom to themselves. So they're sleeping already. So we had a lot of angels, you see, like people. And that woman doesn't know English. Masha said that we spoke to Magenta. Masha tried to translate something in Google because she doesn't know English. My daughter doesn't know Polish.
Wow.
So that was amazing. And later, next day, yeah, we received, like they sent us photos at Victoria's apartment when they spent a night at that woman's place. They came to my student's apartment and she has also baby daughter, 2-year-old. And they sent us a beautiful photo where my daughter and my granddaughter and Vika's daughter is lying in my daughter's like hand like this and looking at her with so much love. You know, like Vika said, it's amazing. Like her daughter fell in love with my daughter right away. So she just looked at her and felt some affinity, you know. So they spent some beautiful time there, of course, was, you know, playing, sort of getting back to life, you know, after this horrifying journey, fatiguing. But, you know, children are amazing. They are so strong, resilient. It's to me, that was the most surprising fact of everything. So we adults, we cannot endure what they can endure.
From Dnipro to Lviv to Poland to the Netherlands, she's safe now.
Yeah.
They're safe now.
Thank God. Yeah, now they are safe, absolutely. And now that's much better, of course. That train also took some time. It's like 12 hours by train, I guess. Because one problem is they don't have an international passport. That's another problem, huge legal issue for many women and children. Because my daughter applied for this passport, which is a necessary, a must, yes, if you want to travel anywhere, for herself and for daughter. And she applied like a week before the war started. And of course, offices that issue passports are closed now, so she has only internal Ukrainian passport and certificate for the baby. And that's now growing like a big problem, what to do now, how we can get them here, at least for temporary state, to me. There is only way, probably humanitarian parole, from what I've heard. I started researching it because it's you know, there are a host of legal issues. What do you do next, right? How do they stay in NL? How long? They sort of, they can, but a child is a child. A child needs some care, maybe go into kindergarten. You need some processes to be done, yeah? How do you do all that?
And it's such a time of uncertainty, right? I'm imagining she wants to get back to Ukraine eventually, but what does the future hold?
Unfortunately, yes. Like if, thank God, like Dnipro is still, you know, like was not bombed heavily. And I pray that it won't be bombed. But the whole country is like most of the country. And they started bombing even Western cities, by the way. This night, they bombed Lutsk and Ivano-Frankivsk. And both cities are in the Western Ukraine. They were close to Lviv. So nobody knows. Like these like Mordor, as we call them, orcs, they are completely inhuman, you know. They don't stop at anything. They bomb maternity hospitals, civilian houses, kindergartens. So that's why nobody knows what is going to happen. That's why there is such a huge flow of people, refugees, women mostly, and children. By the way, my cousin, I cannot name him, but he is fighting now. He is a bit like younger than me, but he sent his family. That was also one more tragic story. His wife with 3 children, he just came back home quickly from one, like, I don't know where they are, like stationed now. And again, you cannot say anything about locations. He just came and he told them, you should go right now, like take whatever, like the minimum things. And they're also now in Germany, but they are like not as young as my granddaughter. They're a bit like teenage, 2 boys, teenagers and a girl. So it's easier. But even with that, you know, I cannot say easier. They told me that they were standing about 10 hours to cross the border. They were standing outside.
So your cousin is fighting. Yeah, what are your concerns for him?
Yeah, you know, he is my hero. Absolutely. I mean, because he is a Baptist, I mean, deeply religious person who like who was very active in churches in Dnipro, you know, youth movement in churches. So he met a lot of, and he helped soldiers, by the way, all these years after Donetsk, during Donetsk, like they called it conflict, but it was war in the east of Ukraine, yeah. He went there and helped soldiers because he is a doctor. He helps manual therapy, you know, physical and manual therapy with problems with the back. And he is really devoted to that. He got certificates, he received medical education quite late in life, you know. It's amazing how he did all that before the war. He started with medical college, then went to medical institute, then received one more education, master's. So he has this whole like skill set. And he sends me videos from the place where he is now, how all the soldiers are lying, like all their faces like down, and he comes to each of them and makes injections in the back or says something encouraging to them, because that's his role. And he also, when he came home, he sent us one more video when he was like, came home briefly and all three kids tried to hug him. And he has this big Kalashnikov, you know, like gun. So he's fighting, right? But at the same time, he's also a doctor who helps soldiers, and he knows English a little bit, yeah, because he's been communicating with Americans. He participated in some program in Switzerland, as far as I remember, last year. All of that related to manual therapy and helping soldiers. So he's done a lot to help the army, it's true. And now he's there. He didn't even like have any doubts. He just left the first day because, you know, it's just like our family. I don't want to sound, you know, like how to say selfish, because my heart is aching for all those millions of families like this. We are just one family in the ocean of many, many Ukrainian families torn, you know, this like impossible decision. Someone is left, someone is in Poland, not knowing what to do. And that's what makes me like feel so, you know, so bad for all those women and children. They need help, they need resources, yeah, they need money, they need assistance, psychological. A lot of trauma is going on right now, yeah, even if they are now in safety. I mean, my daughter, like just yesterday, we talked to her. From time to time, she says, but mom, I don't understand what I'm doing here. I want to be back in my city. I want to take Aphrodite to kindergarten, you know. I want to be in my comfort of my room, you know. She has her beautiful room with toys. All of that is behind, and you don't even know, like, whether they will be able to get back, right? That's what is, like, shocking about all this, that overnight, the lives of millions of people were just overturned, disrupted completely. Yeah, so a lot of suffering and drama is going on now. And of course, it's impossible not to feel it. I mean, because I feel like as if I'm connected by 1,000 invisible threads to everyone in Ukraine, not just my family, but all Ukrainians. I feel this pain. And it's sometimes so much that an anger, of course, because how can you process that? Yes.
Yeah.
What do you do to process it? So it's very difficult to, like, you know, to hold yourself together and not to start blaming everyone around you. I understand that the world is helping. They are sending us supplies, but still closing the sky is number one. At least don't let us bomb maternity hospitals and cities, like houses with children, children's houses, orphanages, small villages. They've done so much destruction to children. How many children died because of the attacks, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And Godspeed to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you.
Marina Teplova is a doctoral student at Illinois State University. Her daughter, Masha, and granddaughter, Aphrodite, are among the estimated 2.8 million refugees from the war in Ukraine. Tomorrow on the show, we're scheduled to speak with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin about Ukraine and about the upcoming confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. As chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Durbin has a prominent role in that process. If you want to share today's show or listen again, you can subscribe to our podcast at 21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.